Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod, Robert Gibbs, and Mike Murphy.
Why do you think it is that you're trailing Trump in all these swing state polls?
Because you don't read the polls out. There are 10 polls. 8 of them, I'm beating him in those states. 8 of them. You guys only do 2. CNN and New York Times. Check it out. Check it out. We'll get you a copy of all those other polls.
Okay? You don't believe you're trailing in battleground states?
No, I don't.
They're out to get me. All of them. All of them are.
Yeah. Well, like a half an hour after he had that exchange on the lawn of the White House, Bloomberg came out with another series of battleground state polls that were almost precisely the same as the New York Times poll. But Mike Murphy, how many times have you told candidates, don't get out there talking about polls?
Yeah, no, I tell them, yell at us. We're paid to listen to you and watch your eyes roll up in your head talking about polls. But, you know, not good.
That's what voters always want, is a president who sounds like Nate Silver.
That voice is familiar to anyone who cares about politics, as is his running mate who is with him here, Mark McKinnon,
America's
John
duo.
Heilman, the creators of The Circus, which just left Showtime after 8 incredible years there. Boys, glad
Kudos.
To see you.
Well done,
in 3,
gentlemen.
2, 1. Hello, gentlemen.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about what happens now with you. It's dangerous when you guys have all this free time. It can't last for long, I know.
So, I hate to spoiler alert, but Quiznos, okay? We'll get into details a little later. But what an accomplishment, man. 8 years of a fantastic show. So we're here to celebrate the big finish on Hacks on Tap and get you guys to help unravel the unraveling of our politics here. We've had a particularly bumpy week.
Private Hackaroo is reporting for duty, sir.
So, guys.
Had a buggy week. Probably weekend's already totally Tuesday.
Yeah, I know. But let's see. We got the Third Reich on the march. I mean, the president has decided that the problem is the media conspiracy that's out to lie about his overwhelming political. You know, grim. Very grim. And, of course, we lost the Tim Scott campaign, which was, you know, the atomic clock of progress in American politics. So
crushing.
Anyway, let me let Axe get back to the helm here.
Let's deal with Biden first, and then we'll get on to the Republican circus. We're going to try and use the word circus a lot during this podcast. But, you know, the president got pissed at me, but
you have a new nickname, I'm told.
No, it's not new.
It's what Trump has been calling me for 6 years.
Yeah. My nickname from another president was that son of a bitch who cost me $10 million in New Hampshire. So welcome to the hall of presidential hate.
Whatever he says relative to me is fine, but he should really be focused on these polls and not to deny them, but to acknowledge them and understand that they are trouble. Doesn't mean he can't win. This is such a dynamic process, and he's up against like a crazy ass 91 time indicted.
And really, the best thing any candidate can do, guys, right, is just to recognize they're in trouble. And that's not reality.
It's a gift. Better
just say, listen, we know we got work to do. You know, we're listening. We hear you.
Well, the other thing is, if you're president of the United States, is to say, you know what? I got a couple of wars going. I got some things on my plate, and I'm going to focus on those things. You guys can chew over the polls. There'll be plenty of time for that. But right now, you know, I got work to do, and I'm doing it.
I don't want to be the turd in the punch bowl here.
Why stop now? Why stop now, Heilman?
Of course you do.
Maybe I misunderstood, David. Maybe I misunderstood. I thought what you were saying was Joe Biden maybe shouldn't run. Should abdicate. And I think you're not alone in that. You know, we did an interview with Carville. I did an interview with Carville for the last episode of The Circus, where James basically says, well, who cares what my opinion is? If you look at the polls are telling or speak. Democratic voters are speaking to Joe Biden through the polls. For 2 years, they have been telling him they don't want him. So it's not about me, my opinion, what I think. It's that if you just read all these polls for 2 years, the Democratic electorate is speaking to the president. He should listen.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I made my point. I said he had to make the decision. My view is that if he runs, if he continues to run, and I think he is going to continue to run, he'll be the nominee of the Democratic Party. And so I didn't want to encourage people to challenge him, or I think that only exacerbates the problem. But you look at this, you know, I spent a lot of time because I was sitting on the set at CNN all Tuesday night and they dropped this poll on there. And, you know, a couple of things stood out to me that really were worrisome. One was that 74% said that he didn't have the what did they say, the stamina or sharpness to be president. Trump, just 25% said he did. Trump, 53% said Trump did. But among those 74%, Biden was losing 62-27.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to be George Gallup to figure that one out.
Right.
Carville had a really obvious observation, and I don't think people acknowledge enough, which is, you know, this is about people's life experience. You know, they know people who are 80 years old. They have grandparents. Almost 70. You know, they don't let people be park rangers when they're 66.
Yeah.
You know, much less run the free world. And it's just, it's not that Biden isn't a good guy. It's not that he hadn't done a good job.
Right.
Right. It's not his fault. It's just a fact. I mean, how many people call a hospital and say, give me an 80-year-old heart surgeon?
Good point. I can make a very strong case, and Murphy and I can argue about this, but I think Biden has done some really, really extraordinary things that will have generational importance, and I think he's been a good and in some ways great president. That's really not the issue.
Yeah, and the problem is when you get into this with anybody, they think you're indicting him and what he's done.
It becomes a loyalty thing with the fetish way. You traitor. But look, the problem is the stakes are so high. If this was a regular election, okay, give him the indulgence of running again. He has accomplished, from a Democratic point of view, a lot of good things. And even from my point of view, there are things I applaud that he's done. But the stakes are too high to screw around. And that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. But so how I'm going to answer your question. Yes, I thought if I wished that he would have thought through these things that we were just talking about, and made the what would have been the sensible decision to say, I've run my race, I've done my service to the country, and now it's time to hand the torch to the next generation of leadership, which is kind of what he said he was going to do when he ran. He's not doing that. I mean, that's pretty clear. His reaction to what I said and the White House's reaction. The thing that drives me nuts is that their response is what you heard at the top, which is just dismiss all of it. They put out a 3.5-page strategic memo at that Obama reunion weekend, and the first line was, the structure of the race is the same as it was in 2020. Well, that's not true. You look at this poll and all these other polls, young people are virtually tied. He won them by 21 points last time. He has a big lead among African Americans, but he won by 75 points last time. In the CNN poll, it was 50 points. Hispanic voters, he got 65% of the vote last time. He's ahead by 4 now. I mean, these are disquieting numbers, and even if they're off by a couple of points one way or the other, they spell trouble. So don't deny what is absolutely clear. It doesn't inspire confidence in a campaign to send Jim Messina out there to say, oh, this is just like 2011 with Barack Obama.
In the bag. It's no. In the bag. Yeah,
I've never noticed a point in the I covered the 2012 race pretty closely. I never saw a Barack Obama losing 22% of the African-American vote to Mitt Romney. I think, you know, I mean, there's a lot of differences in those cycles, as David, you know well. I just, you know, I agree with you. It's
not the least of which, John, is that Barack Obama was 30 years younger.
Yes, and Barack Obama's base, as you know, was steadfast with him. His base was with him even at the worst moments in his presidency. He still had off the charts numbers with African Americans, off the charts numbers with young voters. And you look at the unraveling of right now, of the Biden coalition, and if you're taking seriously the notion that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy, an existential threat to democracy, you can't just be in denial about those realities. They will say to you, hey, once the race comes into focus, a lot of these Democratic base constituencies don't really seriously think Trump will be the nominee,
right?
Because they're not paying attention to politics. But when we get to Labor Day next year, they'll all focus, and it will be 2020 all over again. To which I say, man, that is a big risk to take. You know, it's
right,
just
exactly.
I mean, I'm not actually advocating anything in here, but I agree with you. The notion that you close your eyes and sort of say it's just like 2020 all over again. A lot of those black voters in 2020 heard Joe Biden say, they looked at him and said, he's the only way to beat Trump, and he's going to be transitional. I'm going to get one term of Joe Biden, and then he's going to hand it off. And they look at him now and say, I didn't sign up for 8 years of this. And they got to convince those people that they should stick with him for another 4 years.
I'm a little split on this, because I think a lot of the kind of loose vote in that data is a vote that a competent Democratic campaign ought to get back. But the larger point to me, and what I really saw in that little Biden moment with, you know, you and your stinking polls, is what the real problem might be in the campaign, which is Biden. You know, that's what staff like is like. Can you imagine? I mean, you got to, when they come in, Mr. President, we're going to have to change things up a little bit. You can't get arrested in a couple of key states against an orange lunatic. No, damn it, it's you guys. You're not getting the message out. Here, let me read you a few. Make an ad with these, smart guy. I can just hear it. And that is a problem, because if the boss wants to run a bet, yes.
Well, I think we saw it, actually, because they did several months of media touting Bidenomics.
Yeah. Put your name on the failure. You know, it's on.
That went very well.
And so, I think that is part of it. But there's also, you know, I thought, Jonathan Martin wrote a piece this week, and he talked to a lot of people and aggregated some ideas about what should be done. And I think, a bunch of those make sense, whether they'll do them or not, I don't know. But the thing that's alarming to me is I don't see like a full, Biden says I'm full out in, but I don't see a full out campaign.
No, they're hiding him a bit because they're scared. You know, they haven't decided. I keep saying he ought to put his young, brilliant cabinet around. Where's Raimondo, the great one? Where's, Mitch Landrieu? Where's Buttigieg? You know, surround the action team, and he's the senior. He can be Professor Xavier. Put him, shave his head and put him in a wheelchair. It's okay, but they're afraid that'll make him look old. They've lost the old thing. You know, counterattack.
The cabinet can be useful to an extent, but they're sort of bound in some ways.
Except for Gina Raimondo, who's is the solution to all problems. For Raimondo can solve.
Murphy's the only one with a Gina Raimondo bobblehead doll on his desk.
No, I have one too.
I have a shrine, actually, with candles.
Those are collector's items, by the way. Hold on to those. Those are worth something. But here's the thing, and McKinnon, you've been involved in a bunch of presidential campaigns, and you were involved in 2004. When you're an embattled incumbent, rule number one is do not let this become a referendum. Do not let it become an up or down vote on you. Make sure the opponent is part of the equation. And you did some diabolically clever work to make sure that was true with John Kerry back in 2004.
Well, we were blessed by our opposition, but so is Biden.
Right. More blessed than anybody.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what I don't understand, guys. I don't understand why every single day there isn't someone out there kind of pressing the case, making the comparative argument. Biden was the originator, not the originator, but he was an amplifier of the old Kevin White thing. Don't compare me to the almighty, compare me to the alternative. I don't see a whole lot of comparing going on out there. It seems more like he wants to be elevated and celebrated, and that's just not going to happen.
I've heard it from every incumbent. Well, not everyone, but it's very frequent. I'm sure, Mark, you've been here too, and John, you've reported on it, where the incumbent says, all right, I've written the first ad, and there's a crumpled piece of paper. Here are my 82 accomplishments, and I've got an opening line, which is, hey, idiots, you owe me your vote, because look at what I did for you. You know how hard it is to get up every early and do all these legislative accomplishments? And that is... That's death. And I smell it now.
And if you just had a clearer mind, voters, if you could just, if you just weren't so deluded, if you just could see how great your lives are now and how great the economy is.
And it's not as if they're not providing an opportunity for contrast. I mean, John did an interview with Steve Bannon that will peel your face off.
No, listen. In fact, since you brought it up, play a little bit of that Bannon interview.
You have a MAGA lawyer who likes to come on your podcast, Mike Davis. Here's what he suggested were the top priorities for Trump's attorney general. One, fire the deep state executive branch. Two, indict the whole Biden family. Three, deport 10 million people, kids in cages. It will be glorious. Four, detain people at Gitmo. Five, pardon every January 6th defendant. What do you think about that five-step plan?
I think
plan?
It's fantastic.
All five?
All five. We're going to start the largest deportation program in history. All 10 million must leave.
You're saying that it's about people's gut feelings, about people's lived experiences. You think somebody that's struggling right now in the economy cares about firing random deep state people, indicting Joe Biden's brother, deporting people?
Did I say that's all they're going to do? That's Mike Davis, who'll probably be the attorney general.
Or White House counsel, he went on to clarify that. Like that man, those positions will either be those of the White House counsel or the Attorney General.
No, but that's the reality.
I know.
That's the reality.
I know.
But there are also realities, smaller reality. I mean, every day on just basic kind of stuff, Trump says and does stuff that warrants comment and warrants contrast, not necessarily from the president, but there should be a campaign, and there isn't. And that is kind of shocking, when Trump goes out and talks about executing people, or when Trump goes out as he did this week.
That's really true. I mean, it feels like it's a Rose Garden strategy. It doesn't feel like there's a real campaign going.
Yeah.
They don't trust Biden as a candidate, so their response is to do nothing to lower risk.
Well, then
risk,
get other people on the field.
I know. Hey, I know.
Come on, Murphy.
Yeah, I'll straighten it out. I've been yelling at these guys for a year predicting he'd be in
trouble.
Think
about how far we've come when Mark McKinnon's campaign destroyed Iran's reputation for saying, I voted before I voted against it. And now you've got Donald Trump like echoing, taking a page literally out of Hitler's playbook. And there seems to be nothing. They seem to have no ability to even make a dent against that. Like almost every day, Trump says something that's just on the face of it, 100 times worse than anything any candidate any of you have ever worked for. Yeah. And somehow it doesn't seem like the Biden campaign can lay a glove on him. I don't understand that. It just makes no. I'm agreeing with you guys vociferously, but like it's not like Trump's not giving people material to work with.
No, it's like he's trying to help. Let's listen to the Vermin clip here because this is something else. I mean, this even by the Trump standard. To your point, it's Third Reich time over at the Orange Empire.
Today, especially in honor of our great veterans on Veterans Day, we pledge to you that we will root out the communists, Marxists, fascists, and the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country, that lie and steal and cheat on elections, and will do anything possible. They'll do anything, whether legally or illegally, to destroy America and to destroy the American dream.
I mean, I'm struck because I've been hearing about all this in kind of the echo chamber. I didn't even realize that he was doing it on Veterans Day.
Veterans Day.
Right.
Veterans Day. How many veterans gave their lives to turn back Hitler and fascism? And he is honoring them by echoing the words of the Führer.
Well, and then you get the coup de grace, which is when anybody points out that this is a direct lift from the Führer, they then promise to destroy that person's life entirely. Anybody who points out, we're keeping a list. If you mention Trump being an autocrat, Hitler, Mussolini, anything next to Trump, when he becomes president, your life will be completely destroyed.
And I think there's two things about the comment. One is, I think there's a very good chance Trump doesn't even know what it means or the historical association, or that he does. But in either case, they're both pretty bad.
But who's the staffer with the dog-eared copy of Hitler's
Steve
top
Miller.
10 speeches? Yeah. It's unbelievable.
He has a German shepherd-eared copy of the...
he prefers it in the original Deutsch, but he put it in English
so
for Trump.
So just getting back, we're going to get on to the Republicans in a second, but just getting back to the Biden campaign, someone said, John, you said, they said, well, there are a lot of low information voters and when they tune in and so on. And that is true. But, You know, I don't know what their plan is to reach these low information voters. You know,
AM radio.
Yeah.
Biden's already instructed, call Mitch Miller. Straighten this out.
One of the concerning things is
direct mail.
The Trump campaign is very, very good at working social media, at finding those seams and exploiting them. And like, what is the comparable effort going on right now to counter that? I mean, it's particularly, there are all kinds of opportunities, for example, to split young people away. This war has lent to it. They don't even have to mention Trump. All they're trying to do is get people disaffected from Biden. And you guys know this, that, this takes an operation. There's no evidence of any of this. So yeah, I am frustrated.
Well, there is a left-wing social media campaign. It's RFK Jr. That's the problem. It's the third party people who know how to exploit this, and they're all going to try to chisel votes off Biden. Another disaster. Vacuums get filled.
This has been a very uplifting segment of the show. Thank you guys for having us on. McKinnon always says he's a prisoner of hope. You guys are like, throwing away the key.
The cell's getting very dark.
I keep my hope in the Republican primary as a narrow flickering candle we'll get to.
Don't you remember the audacity of hope? Hope is what you have to have when everything seems dark and there's no obvious way forward. What we're trying to do, though, is encourage the Biden campaign to activate. And because if all we have is hope, it's not going to go well.
They've definitely activated against Axelrod. There's no doubt about that. If they could just bring that kind of focus to to the Republicans,
they move Trump up the enemies list on top of you, then we'd have some progress here. Get the message out.
Okay, then let's take a break right here, and we'll be right back. Jamar talked about the organization of the campaign, and it's sort of balkanized and located in the White House. So you've got lots of different power centers there. One thing he suggested was they ought to empower someone. He suggested Jen O'Malley Dillon, who's the deputy White House chief of staff, who is running the campaign apparently, but doing that as she's doing her other job and just putting her in charge of the campaign. One I liked was bringing our old buddy Rahm Emanuel back to be chairman of the campaign. Can you imagine if he were there banging on Trump every single day and also banging on the campaign? But that's not going to happen because they're not going to want that.
Right, exactly.
He has access to, in Japan, I think he has access to a lot of really good, high-quality dead fish that he could send. He could do it from there. Like, just incredible. Like,
yeah,
just
they know how to
like
use
really high-quality
torah.
They know
how to use dead fish there. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. But I just hope that what this is a wake-up call. These polls are a wake-up call that, no, actually, we can't discount these. This is a freaking serious problem. And what do we need to do to get this thing going? Because I don't think Biden's going to, I mean, I think Biden is running. I don't think that Dean Phillips is going to upend him.
No.
He is going to make a few shekels for our buddy Steve Schmidt, though, who, did you see, moved over to the super PAC for Dean Phillips.
Of course, there's more money and less governance there.
That's like a that's like a Mike Murphy, Jeb Bush move there. Did I say that out loud? About that. You guys can edit that out later.
We actually had an audit committee controlled by the donors, and I'm the only super PAC guy in the history of the world, underreported, to refund $10 million plus dollars to the donors when things didn't work out. But no, Schmidt is on the usual grifting deal. Didn't anybody call Howard Schultz, by the way? How hard is he to find?
Yeah, I think Dean Phillips is a decent, naive guy.
Exactly.
But boy, he's like a lamb to slaughter here for venal political consultants. Yeah, yeah.
Not to keep this conversation going longer than necessary, but I was fascinated when in this interview with James, because he made a point that I thought was that people don't focus on enough in general. He's like, the Democratic bench is really strong. It's not like there's not, it's not people say, well, there's no Democratic bench. He's like, you can rattle off 10 names of people who are from Beshear to Gretchen Whitmer to, you know, just rattle them off. There's, it's not like there's a, we're like, oh, well, we got to do this because we got no other options here.
Well, that's part of, you know, the president ran out the string here. I mean, one of the things people say, well, who do we have? That's actually what campaigns are for. You
sure.
know, that's how you find out. That's how these candidates are pressure tested. And of a in a field of very good candidates, one of them would have emerged and some would have been proven wanting. Look at DeSantis, who was going to be, who was on his way to the White House a year ago and has got a one-way ticket to Palookaville now because he was pressure tested in the campaign. But there's no time for that now.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem. And the president knew when he announced in April that if he waited, then the answer would be what you hear now, which is, well, it's too late. You know, it's too late for anyone else.
But again, it's down to him. That was the hubris. And presidents have a lot of hubris, comes with the process. But the stakes are so high, and the talent bench on the Democratic side is so full, it was a selfish act. And now, if Trump wins, Biden's legacy will be that. And that's tragic.
I think you're ignoring history. You think back to, you know, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama. No ego in any of those guys. Like, they were like the egoless presidencies. None of them had any hubris.
Yeah, humility was actually Barack's Secret Service code name.
We had to do the Stuart Smalley thing with him every morning and pump him up. Back then.
And he would always open every meeting by, I don't know the answer. You guys tell me.
You really are the chosen one. We'll say it again.
Let's go into the Republicans here because we've played the Third Reich stuff and you know, every day there's craziness. Every day the legal picture darkens and Trump continues to roll on here and is... I mean, Murphy, what percentage chance are you giving now that he's not going to be the Republican nominee?
I have said the same thing for over a year.
That's not true.
I have.
All right, go ahead.
I have for more than a year.
We've got tape. Go ahead.
No. Play it because I'll go through it again. I don't buy the completely invincible Trump. I think the field will narrow and somebody has a shot to hurt him in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. And look, I know what all the polls say. They tell me exactly if the primary was held last week, what would be happening.
You sound like Joe Biden.
There is movement for Haley. The field is narrowing. She's the only one. Right. She's the one who won the preseason and has a little bit of gas. She's got money now.
Did you see that? She poured $10 million into Iowa and
the Tim Scott
New Hampshire
thing helps her a bunch.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, you know, there is a shot. That's all I've said. It'll tighten, and it's going to tighten. Does that mean Trump is not going to be the nominee? Oh, the odds on favorite has always been Trump for the nominee, but I think he'll have a little trouble. We will see.
Given the way that the world works, and the Trumpified world versus the old world, does somebody have to be? She's obviously the right person because she could actually take him on in South Carolina. To me, the question is like, can she get there? Right. So does she have to beat him in Iowa, New Hampshire? Does she?
I don't think so.
I think she has to beat him in New Hampshire. He's got to lose. I mean, the elegant way is he wins. I mean, he loses all three. 1, 2, 3, he's dead. But if she is the second place, if she can edge DeSantis, and a week ago she wasn't second. The question is, will Governor Kim Reynolds endorse? But I think endorsements are overrated in presidential stuff. But if she can come out with that second place zoom out of Iowa and beat him in New Hampshire, a state that is short on Republican primary voters, we tend to forget. She, unlike, say, example, McCain in 2000, she can bounce to South Carolina with something there. So there's just a scenario. Trump's getting crazier. People are dropping out, which is what I predicted. The hard prediction was, can Trump actually be beat? And we're going to have to wait and see. Axe thinks damn near impossible, I think would be fair. I think it's like a 1 in 3 shot.
What's the date of South Carolina? Does anybody know?
It's a couple weeks because they've got this rigged Nevada thing, too, the Trump guy's rigged, so there's no real voter contest there.
Well, the reason I'm thinking about that is just, you know, to your point, Mike, just to echo it, it's, you know, I think, too, if I've for a long time I've written that Haley's the last.
Hannah, our trusty producer, says February 24th.
Okay, February 24th. So the point is that he'll be on trial like 10 days after that. So yes. Unlikely, but Haley, strong second, wins New Hampshire, wins South Carolina. Trump's going into trial on Super Tuesday.
Right.
Suddenly, and Mike, I guess, to the man who would be king. He bleeds, mortal, and suddenly people freak out.
And yet we don't know, okay? Nobody knows. But all last year, people were saying, when the indictments were coming, the thing we've been saying for 8 years, well, he'll never get away with that. He'll never get away with that. And what we found was that the indictments actually strengthened him because he, with his feral genius, positioned this as part of a deep state Biden-inspired plot to stop him from running. By the way, the reason he thinks that is because back in 2019 or whatever, he was trying to hook up Zelensky in a plot to tag Biden so that he couldn't run. And he thinks, well, that's what I would do. So that's what they're doing.
He always projects. By the way, I wish there was more of a deep state plot to stop him, but that's another topic.
Me too. Team deep state over here.
Yeah, me too. Sign me up.
Team deep state. Let's go. Hey, by the way, just one thing on the calendar. Taking out Murphy's point, the Nevada caucuses are rigged. But the New Hampshire primary to the South Carolina primary is a month. January 23rd to February 24th. Man, if it were true, just to play out Mike's fantasy scenario, if it were true that Haley beat him in New Hampshire, imagine what that month's going to look like.
Yeah,
I mean, that's going to be a wild, that'll be a wild month in Republican politics.
Interesting,
the long run to South Carolina where we have a month free for all. Two candidates.
One thing we haven't seen, and I think Haley's been the standout candidate in the sort of in that sort of B category, you know, junior varsity competition. she's been the standout, but DeSantis has sort of taken her on the air in Iowa. But if Trump thinks she's a threat, she'll be tested in a way she hasn't been tested. And these positions of hers, some of which I agree with, you know, relative to Ukraine.
Oh, you just killed her.
And her position on entitlements, all this stuff will get quite an airing, and we'll see what happens. But before she ever gets there, I think if DeSantis finishes second in Iowa, huge problem for her.
I agree.
I think if Chris Christie has run a New Hampshire focused campaign, but he is getting some votes there, and he is in effect.
He's going to get out.
You think he'll get out?
I do.
Really?
I can't get into my secret sources, but I believe after the next debate, and he'll be for Haley. That's what I'm predicting. Nobody in Haley world told me any of this. It's just, that's just my Kreskin-like ability to look inside the fascinating.
All right, okay. Are we
no one in Haley world told me that, but I have a really good source.
No, nobody did. I've been a Haley critic. I'm not her biggest fan, but to stop Trump, my God, I love her.
Breaking news there on Hacks on Tap.
Yeah. Really? No. I just crazy speculation from Mike
it's
Murphy.
It's bullshit until it happens.
Right.
But Murphy's gone rogue.
I'll bet you $5, Axelrod, that he drops out before New Hampshire.
Murphy, I know how well you're doing. And the fact that you're willing to bet me $5
sounds like he doesn't believe a word of what he's saying.
Yeah. No. I don't want to take $5 away from Axelrod. That's all. Because I know that when President Biden is reelected, he's going to have to locate to the hills of Portugal. So that's the other presidential retribution. So, no, I'll bet more.
The rest of us are looking at Portugal in case Trump wins. David's looking at Portugal in case Biden wins. That's right.
I'm going to get an RV and move around the country, and I'll outquick him, and he'll never find me.
Irish rage. You warm up the Maxwell. I'm going to go get him.
Okay, let's take a break right here for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back. Let's take 1 minute here and give him his due and roll the Tim Scott tape.
Yes.
But when I go back to Iowa, it will not be as a presidential candidate. I am suspending my campaign. I think the voters who are the most remarkable people on the planet, have been really clear that they're telling me not now, Tim.
Fair statement. I think that that's true.
Yeah. I don't think you need a $1 million computer to decipher the opinions there. But look, I like Scott, and I was hopeful at the beginning that he would try the optimistic conservative thing. But instead, it was all styrofoam mush and pandering to Trump. And I think he could have been very interesting, but he just didn't have the edge.
Listen, he was filled with optimism. You just don't have a very optimistic party right now. I mean, he was a very optimistic country.
For that matter.
He was a sunny, optimistic guy in an American carnage party.
But no, he was doing like the light piano version of Trump music, though. You know, if you're going to be the sunny optimist, you got to have sunny optimistic policies.
I hate to see when campaigns turn people into something they're not. And when he did his Biden has blood on his hands moment, I was like, geez.
Yeah, that was it.
Really?
Yeah. He's gone now. 3-person race. And we'll see what happens. But there was another announcement last week, another dropping out that sounded more like maybe a dropping in. And that came from the senator from West Virginia.
I've made one of the toughest decisions of my life and decided that I will not be running for re-election to United States Senate. But what I will be doing is traveling the country and speaking out to see if there is an interest in creating a movement to mobilize the middle and bring Americans together.
We have the chairman of the No Labels Party with us today, conveniently.
Yeah, okay. Oh, the Hex on Tap hot seat. Here we are.
So Mark McKinnon.
The mega question.
Well, yeah, I know they have feverishly been recruiting Manchin for something. What? How do you interpret Manchin's comments? And give us an update on your No Labels venture.
Okay, I'll start off with my caveat. I've had nothing to do with this organization in more than a decade, but I do know the players pretty well, and I think I can give you at least some observations from somebody who's been around those folks.
All right. Okay. Enough disclaimer. Well, let's get to the meat of it.
See what I have to put up, Mark? It's unbelievable.
There's no surprise to what Manchin's doing here. I mean, he is a consummate, he's a really good poker player, a really good political poker player. There was no way he was going to win that race against Jim Justice.
Impossible. People forget, just let me interrupt you for one second. People forget that he only won by 3 points in 2018, which was a Democratic year. Donald Trump carried that state by almost 40 points. He was not going to win.
Yeah, and let's remember that Joe Biden would not have his infrastructure package without Joe Manchin.
Without question. Or a bunch of other things, including
judges. Yes, part of the legacy.
I think it's fair to say any competent, non-indicted Republican candidate that was going to win this race. It's not even a shot at Joe Manchin. It's like, and Justice is, you know, is actually pretty good.
And by the way, I'm not sure an indictment is that big a problem anymore.
Might not be a big problem, right? I would say as long as he's not incarcerated, you know, and he's ambulatory, right?
I'll cut to the chase and just say a couple things about it. One, I think that Manchin will play this out for as long as he can. I think he'll dance around it. And there is a long history with him and No Labels. They're very familiar with each other. I think it's quite likely that they'll look at him as some sort of ticket package. They want a Republican.
They're talking about putting a Republican on top, right?
They want to put a Republican on top. But at the end of the day, and this is kind of my insurance on this notion of anything they're doing, which is that Joe Lieberman, who I love, and he is a man of great faith, and I trust anything that he's. I mean, I just.
What's the point here?
Okay, the point is that Joe Lieberman says a couple of things. One, if they get down to the finish line in May or June and they have this unity ticket, whoever it is, Manchin or somebody else, and it does not clearly have a path to victory, they're going to pull it down. In other words, if Biden has 30-35%, but Trump has 30-35% in this dream ticket has 15 or 20%, they're done. Then they go home.
I can save them time and just do it now.
I know.
Too. And Fred and a lot of the good people there. But
it seems so unlikely. But in this environment, who knows? I mean, as James says, it's not the era of strategic certainty. So, but this is McKinnon going rogue. I think there's a plan B here, which is the other thing that Joe Lieberman says is that the whole point of this exercise is to ensure, despite what Third Way and the Lincoln Project says, that this is not a secret operation to elect Trump. It's just the opposite. But Lieberman says the whole point of this exercise is to ensure that Donald Trump is not reelected. If that's true,
and I believe it is, I believe Lieberman, then after they pull it down, they could go to a plan B, which is that they run favorite son candidate, Republican candidates in 5 or 6 or 7 key swing states, run Pat McCrory in North Carolina, run Mitt Romney, not in Utah, but in Nevada, where he's very popular with Mormons. All you got to do is take a point or two off of Trump, and then they do what they said, which is to ensure that Trump is not reelected. It's a triple bank shot, I know, but...
No, no, it's Vulcan three-dimensional chess. I mean...
I'm just putting it all on the table, like you said.
It's not the bank shot that worries me, and we've talked about this before. We kicked the shit out of you when you were on here last time, McKinnon, about this. But I just think Bruce. The reality is, and some of these polls are reflecting this, that third-party candidates tend to help Trump. I mean, Trump has a high floor and a low ceiling, and you add other players in here and default positions for people who don't want to vote for Biden, don't want to vote for Trump.
Right. Biden needs a lot of voters holding their nose, trapped into voting for him. And when you create a steam valve where they can escape, put on a halo and say, you know, I'm going to the PBS dinner, I'm going to stop along the way to save democracy, it's just bad for Biden. And, you know, I get the reasoning, but the fundamental threshold choice in a presidential, as you know, is first, do I want the incumbent or not?
Yeah.
So I could save Joe and Fred and my friends over there some time.
I think that's likely where it ends up.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
And by the way, if that mission drifts, I'll be the first one with a spear out there taking them.
Well, we'll all be in Portugal.
Yeah.
Or in an RV.
Steve Bannon's going to get me out of the gulag.
One thing on this mansion thing, and by the way, you're right, he will play it out. Dick Durbin had it right. I agree with you on Manchin, by the way. I don't think Democrats, for all their frustrations with Manchin, appreciate the fact that he provided the sort of decisive votes on all the key legislation that Joe Biden passed, on which he's going
They don't
to
even
run.
Give Biden credit for that. That's the problem. That's an unruly mob out there, and they're not.
By the way, at the end of the day, I don't think Manchin would want his legacy to be that he helped elect Trump either.
No, I think he hates Trump.
Yeah, I think Manchin's got the grease paint problem, though. He's a guy who was the king of West Virginia for as long as humanly possible. Now he's getting the ejector chair. And he doesn't really like the idea of being the new head of the American License Plate and Window Frame Association. So he's going to go be Gypsy Rose Lee. He's going to strip his way across the country, being begged to run for president.
He'd be really good at that job, though, the one you just said.
We need leadership in
Murphy
that.
Murphy consults for them. He probably put the idea
on my client list for years. We're trying to triple the number of required license plates for vehicles. Make them easier to read, goddammit. License plates are jobs, my friends.
You know, the interesting thing is he's talking about starting some other kind of like middle political organization.
That's
kind of like the label with his daughter running it.
Yeah, the dotted yellow line in the middle of the highway.
Dick Durbin said of Manchin that he is the greatest tease in American politics. And there is something to that. And I think he will be teasing for quite a while here until we know exactly what he's doing. One last thing on this footnote to it. Steve Daines, who's, you know, doing a damn good job for the Republicans in the Senate, running their Senate committee, worked really hard to get the governor, Jim Justice, to run. Alex Mooney, a right-wing congressman, sort of MAGA guy, is running. Daines was the intermediary to Trump to get him to endorse Justice and crush Mooney's hopes in that primary. And the way he sold it reportedly to Trump was that will free Manchin up to mess around in the presidential race, and this will be helpful to you. So pretty wily maneuvering by Daines, who's done a pretty good job of getting the people he wanted into these key races. And now a lot of attention is going to be focused on Montana, on Ohio, because this one's off the board. Though, as you guys point out, as I point out, it was probably off the board to start with.
Let's stop for a minute and listen to a word from one of our fine sponsors. If you have a question for the Hacks, all you have to do is email us at hacksontap@gmail.com, hacksontap@gmail.com, or because we've entered the 20th century reluctantly, you can leave a voicemail and you might hear your incredible melodious tones right here on the podcasting machine. Now, we have an impossible to remember number. I work here and I can't remember the damn thing. Hannah, what is our number?
Please call us at 773-389-4471 and remember to leave your name and to hang up when you are done and keep it under 20 seconds.
Yeah, we do the bloviating around here. Good job, Hannah.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Murphy, there is a man named Brad who called in and has a special question about you. So let's hear from Brad.
This is Brad, based in Nairobi. Question for Mike Murphy. If you were a younger Mike Murphy at the beginning of your hack career, can you honestly say you wouldn't jump on that Trump train if you had the chance, despite your many disagreements with the Orange Venice?
Well, hello, Brad. Thank you for that question.
Nairobi, man.
Nairobi, a part of our worldwide reach. You know, in a couple of countries, we're like the number one political podcast because the eight guys at the embassy listen, and that is enough. So thank you for flying the hack.
Brad from Nairobi. First time, long time.
Yes. So the answer is I started doing this when I was still in college, and badly. And I made a lot of stupid decisions along the way. You get older and wiser. But I've always hated Trump. And I started really hating Trump in 1993, which was not the beginning of my career, but it was in the beginning half when I was working for Christine Todd Whitman, who had become governor of New Jersey. That was a campaign I did. I did a reelect too. And Trump was, you know, crapping his way around Atlantic City, ruining lives. So I learned to despise him at that point. So I don't think I ever would have fallen for the Trump train. But when you're young in political consulting, you're kind of like a young doctor. You want to cut. You want to operate. So young and irresponsible decisions, I do not think I'm immune to, but I would never work for Donald
Trump. Mike, if you were a young operative trying to get on a campaign in 2016, Trump would have been your 18th interview, right? You started with Jeb, you went to Marco. Trump, so yeah. You talk about broken toys.
Dragland, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember in 16, there were people on the Trump campaign that there was a couple of Iowa people who we wouldn't even let near the pencil sharpener on the governor races, you know, let alone. So that was not my crowd.
Different now, by the way. Different now. Yeah,
true enough.
Is. And by the way, we should have mentioned this earlier. We mentioned Haley pouring money into Iowa. So's Trump.
Yeah,
Trump is paying
scared.
A lot
they've
of attention to
me.
Iowa.
Well, Trump's got a much smarter campaign this time around. Much smarter.
Well, and he's going, like, if you think about it, look at his travel schedule. He's been in Iowa way more than he's been anyplace else. He looks like, I think that losing to Cruz there in 16 still kind of haunts him. That's the place he doesn't feel confident.
It's soft there,
no, it's like the only place in the country he doesn't think he really is as dominant. You can see just the way he acts, how often he goes there, how he talks about it. It's like it's in his head.
It's not a gold toilet seat kind of state.
All right, we have a voicemail here. I think the guy was trying to place a bet, but after that, he got to a pretty good question. This is from Ross.
My question is for David. This is Ross in Woodridge, Illinois. Regarding some of your recent comments around Biden and, you know, where he's running, I guess I'm just wondering, we know that, you know, many of you think that Biden is the guy and that's probably going to be it, but given what you've said about his age and your sentiments and your tweets, who would be the person that you'd want to run instead of Joe Biden for the Democratic nominee in 2024? Thanks, David.
Thank you, Ross. And did he mention that he's from Djibouti? I don't think he gave his location there.
Now, actually, you're not allowed to just say about this. That's what campaigns are for. Can't say who I'd be for. That's what campaigns are for. They'd sort it out. Answer the man's question. He wants to know who you really think would
name
be
a candidate.
Yeah,
spoken,
right.
Spoken like a smarty pants who's never been in a campaign. As was mentioned before, I think Carville's right. There's lots of talent in the Democratic Party. I've been very clear about, you know, I think Gretchen Whitmer is a top-tier politician who would be a strong candidate because she's from the middle of the country. She presents that way, and I think that would have broad appeal. Bashir, I think you'll see other governors, including my own governor, J.B. Pritzker, running. Gavin Newsom clearly would be running, and there may be a couple of other governors who would jump in. Senator Warnock would be an interesting candidate who might have the ability to navigate the Democratic primary and is a kind of center-left Democrat appealing guy. Senator Kelly is an interesting
guy.
We'll
take a quick break here and be back in a minute when Axe has got 11 other candidates stuffed
into the
list.
I don't want to do, I mean, it's a long roster of.
Yeah, the point is there's lots of talent out there.
No,
that's
kidding. And we're going to hear every one of them.
Every Democratic senator except Dick Durbin is what you're going to say.
No, not that. But then, you know, Pete Buttigieg would run again. I mean, there would be a strong field. One hopes that we have a functioning democracy in 2028 and we can find out.
Do you guys not think it's true that if Whitmer had jumped in a week ago and ran the first 20 days right, she'd be significantly ahead of Biden in national Democratic polls? Or am I crazy?
I agree with that.
Well, can I answer the second part first?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're crazy.
Well, come on, maybe
not about that.
I've got court papers to prove it.
The road to the Democratic nomination still goes through these southern states with large African-American populations. And, you know, I think Biden does have still, despite his erosion among younger black voters in a general election, still has a foothold there. That's why he set up South Carolina as the first primary. So I think part of the question is who among these candidates, that's why I mentioned Warnock in the mix, who of these candidates can navigate that terrain?
I will tell you, though, if you guys want to go dig around when you're not on the air here, I know you guys have a lot of other things to do besides focusing on politics, but if you do want to look around, ask some friends of yours in Democratic circles what black women think of Gretchen Whitmer, and you will find out that they love her.
Yeah.
I mean, she has a giant constituency among black women all over the country who love that big Gretch and the toughness and the, you know, they hear it in focus groups all over the country that in a lot of ways she's more popular with female black voters than even the vice president is. She got big image and she got a lot of strength in that community. So that's going to be important for her as she goes forward.
I'm actually in Detroit right now doing that kind of shoe leather reporting that I'm known for. And somebody remarked to me about somebody of that demo about Gretchen just yesterday.
Okay. Mark McKinnon, a fella named, or it could be a woman, I guess, named Dylan Roden, will not find out the gender identification of this person because this is not a recorded question. But Dylan says the recently released polls in Iowa show that if DeSantis dropped out, 41% of his voters would move to Trump and 27% to Haley. Based on those percentages, doesn't it improve her chances in Iowa if DeSantis stays in? Probably, this person says probably Ramaswamy too.
This is a math question for MCAT. I've never seen MCAT. Do you have your pocket calculator there, MCAT?
It's run out of batteries. That's a great question from they. You know, that's what the data shows. And, you know, I think there, people like me make a lot of assumptions about if they're not for Trump now, why would they be after somebody dropped out? I'm a little skeptical of it. And I think that I'm kind of with Mike on the Haley train. And I just think that, you know, elections are also so much about momentum and people can smell it. And Iowa voters are very, you know, they really pay attention to this stuff. They wait and they vote late. And I think if, you know, with the Scott thing, I think is helping her. She did great in the third debate. So I think if DeSantis actually dropped out, I think people would quickly, you know, pick up the scent that this is a Haley momentum thing. And that's part of the reason he's dropping out is that she's doing so well. And I think that there'd be a big herd shift toward Haley.
I agree.
I think that's like a Haley Mary. I'm not sure that is true.
The pun cops are online too.
Listen, it does underscore one thing, though. DeSantis had a theory, which is if he could be Trumpier than Trump, that was when Trump faded away, that he would inherit that. The result of it is that he is the second choice of a lot of Trump voters. I think he would get that 41%. It also has made him a much weaker candidate outside of Iowa. He has run an Iowa-only campaign. So even if he finishes second in Iowa, I don't think his ability to move on is going to
be he's not an particularly, automatic at all.
Particularly good. Hey, John, Patrick asked, do you all think it will be harder for Democrats to run on abortion in states like Ohio, who have now enshrined the right into their state constitution. In other words, did Democrats miss a chance to put that on the ballot? And let me amend the question to say, do you feel that if it gets on the ballot in Florida and a couple of other states, Nevada and so on, will that help improve Democratic chances in 2024?
I'm going to use the Axelrod strategy here. Let me answer the second question first. Yes, for sure. Any state where you can get a ballot initiative on right now that's a battleground state is going to help Democrats on abortion. And then there's obviously a huge effort going on to get that done. But I think that the reality is, given Trump's record, and I mean his record on the Supreme Court, his open boasting, the all the audio, all the video, yeah, where he takes credit for repealing Roe versus Wade, in combination with the fact that the pro-choice groups and Democrats, they've gotten one thing they've done really well. They have convinced a lot of voters, because there's a lot of evidence to suggest it's true, that Republicans want to have a nationwide ban repealing abortion.
Yeah.
And so I think does it complicate things a little bit? Would in an ideal world, would you maybe want to have all of the abortion statewide initiatives on every battleground state ballot in 2024? Ideally, yes. But the reality is Democrats are going to message like crazy that Donald Trump wants to have, he was responsible for repealing Roe v. Wade via the Supreme Court, and that what Republicans ultimately want to do at a national level is try to ban abortion nationwide. And I think they will message the hell out of that, and it will work for them.
We've talked about this before. Trump has been pretty savvy about this, and I think this also may be a reflection of his campaign. It could be him, but he's used the primary to sort of distance himself from the most draconian. I don't think it exempts him from this in the general election, but he went after DeSantis for the 6-week ban, calling it cruel, and he has the ability to do it because he has the thing that works for him in the primary may hurt, yes, him in the general.
At the national level, I think both of you guys, all three of you guys, who've made a lot of ads and directed a lot of ads in your time, when you look at all of that audio and video of Trump boasting about how he repealed Roe v. Wade, you guys would have a field day with that and $250-300 million worth of television advertising just to drive that home. That's at the national election, a general election. That is the message that voters are going to hear. And the rest of these distinctions are not going to mean very much, I don't think, if the Biden campaign does this well.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. The other interesting part of it is we all know Trump is actually pro-choice. So he will react to this pressure and start, like he already has, to pivot away. Then he could have a little turnout problem among the Christian right, who've always been a little suspicious of the Trump deal. So it's kind of bad fork for Trump either way.
We'll see. He's always going to be the guy who put the court on that. I don't know that you can get it on both ends here for Trump.
If Trump screws up, he can. Because you see what his elephant skin is like to take the beating he's going to get on this.
I think you'd rather, if you had it your way, David, you'd rather have, I think you're probably right, you can't have it both ways, but the way you want it is you want it with those voters, with swing voters.
That's one of the ways in which I think the Biden campaign hopes to re-energize those younger voters to get back in the game, and suburban women who clearly are responsive to that issue. All right, guys, how many episodes of The Circus did you do over 8 years?
130.
Essentially documentaries that you do in the time of a week that were high quality and really watchable works. Now we're headed into the most momentous and important campaign of our lifetime. And I know we use that hyperbole all the time, but Murphy, don't you agree? This is it.
Absolutely. It is. Stakes could not be higher. Depressingly high.
You guys aren't going to go on your back porch and make lemonade and watch the world go by. What's going to happen? Is the circus going to come back in another form? What are you going to do?
Oh, well, ice show.
All of us were both, on one hand, extraordinarily grateful for the opportunity to make the show that we made for so long. It's a hard show to make. It was not cheap. We had a lot of support from Showtime to do it when a lot of other people wouldn't have done it. You know, corporate politics in media are what they are, and I would say without taking too much of a shot at Showtime's new owner in Paramount, that they didn't want to be in this game. And they didn't want to be in the game. They all of Showtime Unscripted is basically no longer exists anymore, and they wanted to go in a different direction.
Covering the most important campaign in history wasn't paramount to them, huh?
That pun alert again. So they went out, again, really grateful they let us do it for that long, but they decided, I think it's been a little, people have come to us, I think McKinnon will say that the one thing we've heard from people over the course of last week after this news came out was, what are they thinking? Like, why, how could you end it now? And I think that's sort of how we feel too, which is, you know, we all want to cover 2024, and we're going to try to figure out a way to do it in various ways. We'll all be out there in our various platforms talking about the campaign, but we all think the circus got one more in it. And if we can find someone who will partner up with us and do it, we're game for the fight.
Breaking more news here, Murphy.
Yeah, no. We're talk to our friends at Fubo and see what we can. No, look, it's a proven formula. It's a great show. It's well made. It's cinematic, which is so hard to do at the time speed you guys operate at. I would not be surprised in our streaming multiverse here if your legally enfranchised representatives get a call, and I'm sure hoping they do.
Yeah, ditto. And we hope you guys come back often during this year, which will be a circus. Only,
no lack of material. No material.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, go call Jason Blum. Pitch it as a horror sequel.
You guys are, I can't believe you guys, how many episodes have we had Hacks on Tap at this point? Are you guys keeping count? For those of us who have been listeners, faithful listeners from day one, it feels like there's been like 943 of them, you know, but maybe that's not quite true.
237, I think. Not that I'm counting.
237. Jesus, yeah. Man, you guys are, talk about the atomic clock of podcasting.
Yeah. Unless there's no syndication or we'd be on a boat.
Just as a footnote, Murphy knows this world so well. It took more than 10 years to pitch the show to get it on because people just said that, well, we like the idea, just don't think you can do it. And the reality is we needed technology to catch up anyway. And it was still, to your point, you know what it takes to make a documentary. I mean, and so I'm extraordinarily proud of what we got to do, and extraordinarily lucky that we got to do it.
Well, I would think even if you recast it as like 6 90-minute, you know, in other words, took the pace down but thickened out. Some streamer is crazy not to pick this thing.
You're reading
up,
but, our mail, Murphy.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Take it hard. Carry on, regardless.
Thank you, guys.
Good to see you.
All right. Thank you all.